Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. Everybody, and welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And it's so nice to have you all joining us at the kitchen table today. I'd like to begin by introducing Michelle York, our executive producer, on her iPad. How are you doing?
I'm doing some research over here.
You're doing research, I see.
This is not an iPad. I don't have one of those.
iPhone, whatever it is.
My iPhone. I'm doing a little, because isn't there a new restaurant in New Orleans that's fish?
Yeah, absolutely, Pesh.
Pesh.
You've been there? Yeah, of course. I've been there two or three times.
You've been there two or three times?
Naturally. I'm ahead of the game. I'm always searching out competition.
Only fish on the menu?
Well, no, they have some meat on the menu, but what is this, a commercial for Pesh?
No.
What are we doing here? Do you have friends who own it?
We're going to talk about fish today.
Well, I know we are, but I mean...
So it's related.
Oh, it's related. Oh, it's part of the show. Well, I can see, like I said. Anyway, Michelle York, y'all here in fine fashion. Huh?
Nice to see you.
Well, good, very nice. And across the glass wall over there, of course, keeping our sound balance and our music dynamic as he does every single week is our engineer, Dean Slama. How you doing, Dean?
Hey, John. Hey, Chef.
You've been doing a lot of those musical gigs you do every weekend?
Yeah, I've been doing some weddings. I got a bat mitzvah I just did.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
So we have some fun, yeah.
So describe exactly, what's a night for you? You get hired out to go and be the entertainer. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, if I'm playing Justin Bieber, it's not a good night. But if I'm playing Temptations, we're doing good. We're doing pretty good. So
you're doing... That good sound of the 50s and 60s.
We try to keep it Motown. We try to keep it the classics. But, yeah. You know, the music is all relative to the audience.
Well, no, absolutely. And, I mean, yeah, like if you did Motown for this, for Justin Bieber group, I mean, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
So who's this guy? Get him out of here, right?
For sure, yeah. I mean,
that's why he's good at handling our music. See, he knows what to show you.
He knows all about music.
In other words, he's got to cover our landscape here.
That's right.
So anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have y'all here. Michelle, how are you doing? What have you been up to?
You know what? I am doing very well today. Beautiful day. And I think I have a plan after the show.
Well, that's different from the rest of your life.
I am going fishing.
She's going fishing.
Oh, you cool. Want to come? Because I can bait my own hook, but
yeah, you just
I prefer not to.
You prefer to have somebody else put the worm on the hook.
Yeah, so you want to come?
Or the cricket. I don't know. That sounds like a pretty good idea. You know, I come from a fishing family.
Is that right?
The Falses were absolutely notorious for raising other people's lines.
Notorious is absolutely correct. Notorious for raising other people's lines.
I mean, if nobody was there to help the fish off the hook, we were all about safety. And
you're being humanitarian.
We're humanitarian. So if we saw a big blue channel cat hooked to a drop line in a bar pit pond back of St. James Parish in the Mississippi River, we want to relieve that fish of its pain. And not knowing the rightful owner, we take it home.
Huh? Not knowing the rightful owner. It wasn't a release program. It wasn't catch and release.
Yeah, it was catch and release, yeah. Anyway, no, that is a good idea, though, because, you know, I think you tend to start thinking about fishing when you get into that midsummer season. I mean, you know, crawfish is kind of getting over right now,
so then you start thinking about,
and of course, that June rise has all of the rivers and all the freshwater ponds and everything full, because all that melting ice has just cleared the trash out of the river, pushed it into the Gulf, and here we are with all this ice.
And the river shrimp are done.
The river shrimp are out. And July 1st, they're gone. And I think I might do the same thing. I got my favorite little fishing hole to drop my pole in. It might be a little later today, though. You know, I think many people in South Louisiana would be hard-pressed to find a more relaxing way. Now, I'm not talking about these big sports fishermen. I'm talking about the general public.
Just,
two kids in the back of the car. That's
putt-putting out there.
Yeah, putt-putt. That'd be the best way to do. You know, I think of water, you know, gently rocking a boat. I think of those grassy marshes, you know, that moss hanging on the cypress. Every now and then a little breeze comes your way, and then you get that little light tug on the line, and you think to yourself, I got him.
I got that. See, that's fishing. Now, I mean, when you get into the rigs that start at 30,000, I mean, that's fishing too. That's a different kind of fishing.
That's a whole different sport. And there's nothing more disgusting than being out there and you don't get that little tug on the line. That's happened to me before.
It hasn't.
It has. It has. But if you're lucky, you get a little nibble and you get a little something for dinner. But you know what? Freshwater fishing, any kind of fishing, it's not always leisurely floating in clear water, contemplating life, you know.
You're talking about largemouth bass.
It's not off the row. Well, anybody who's been to a bass tournament like Toledo Bend Lake.
Yeah, there's no little jet leak.
There is no little gentle.
Balls hanging.
No, it's the roar of those boat engines. Men start your engines. That has a whole different meaning.
Thrill
right
of
there.
The competition, yep.
Absolutely. Thrill of the sport, thrill of the hunt. Thrill of the grill comes much later, much later. But the contemplation time, yeah, it's there, but I'm not quite sure if it comes before you clean the fish, after you clean the fish, or maybe after you've already had dinner and you're just sitting back reflecting on the day.
Yeah, well, you're talking about me when you're talking about what to do with it. I'm going to let them worry about how to catch it, what kind of boat they drive, whether it's leisurely, whether moss is hanging, or whether there's a miss hitting them in the face as they're going 40 miles an hour down there.
Just so you know, I've caught some of that moss before, too.
Come on. But you know, Michelle, when you say freshwater, fish. See, that's another big thing. I have to tell you, the first thing that comes to mind to me, I think about crappie. I think of
Sockale. I love crappie.
Sockale. Oh, my God. I love sockale. It's so unbelievable. But also, I mean, you have to think first and foremost, I think of catfish.
Talking about sockale, you like your sockale on the bone.
Oh, that's
whole
on the way.
Fried.
God put a sockale on the bone to eat it that way.
Mm-hmm. I like mine filleted.
Oh, not me. I want to eat around the bone because you can break that crispy tail and all of those. The fins you can eat just like popcorn.
You eat the fins.
Yeah, like potato chips because they're so nice.
That's not bad for your stomach.
No, indeed. Now, what are you talking about? Anyway, but I am a big fan of catfish too because I love the great taste. Nothing's more tender, nothing's more juicy, nothing's more flavorful than a cornmeal battered fillet of a fish. And when you grew up, well, I grew up on Lake de Zaliman, Lake of the Germans.
Yeah, I always hear you talk about Lake de Zaliman catfish.
Oh, my God, are you kidding? If you're lucky enough, and one of the best kept secrets for generations with a little small Lake de Zaliman catfish about 6 to 8 inches long that you could get right out of the water, and you talk about the best tasting catfish ever is those little about 6 to 8 inches long. You clean them. You fry them whole.
You fillet them.
No, indeed not.
Just checking.
A novice does. But the pro, the Germans of Lake of the Germans, Lake des Allemands, the Falses, the Sives, the Webers, the Steins, the Emails, the Rummels, the Heimels, you know, all of us guys, we ate the little fish. Whole rolling cornmeal, always put in a batter of German mustard, just a little Creole mustard. And on that mustard, a little hot sauce. And then we'd roll that around, put it in the cornmeal. Oh, a nice little plate of excellent hush puppies next to it.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Oh, that catfish. Even though you see crappie, sockale, these kind of things, I mean, these are exotics to us in the fresh, even though we have a lot of them, they're so tasty. Catfish is for everybody. Catfish is for the common man, like me.
You know, you talked about fried catfish, and I love fried catfish. But, you know, trying to be health conscious, you know, a lot of times I try to prepare fish in a different way, particularly catfish, because I do have a lot of it. My daddy catches a lot of catfish, as you well know.
Up at that lake around
Three Mile Lake.
Yeah, 3 Mile Lake, yeah.
But the catfish can be good in the oven, too. And I don't know if you've seen those little butter saute
hats. Sure.
Well, that makes it taste a whole lot, you know, because I don't like fishy fish. But you do a little saute in that butter with the different herbs, and that is really good. You
can
stick them in the oven.
Little lemon pepper, yeah.
Little lemon pepper. You can stick them in the oven, too. Little Creole seasoning, butter, lemon, put it in foil so it kind of steams it. That's healthy and light, and I'm not sure I'm as big on baked fish, but I'm trying to get there. But you know what? There's another good fish, which is kind of surprising, the buffalo fish.
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to eat buffalo all the time. We used to eat the buffalo ribs, you know.
Well, that's right. I had buffalo ribs first time out on 3 Mile Lake, but you actually did some buffalo ribs for a TV show not too long ago. sautéed, fried with different sauces. They were really amazing. And we had a little small group of people there to sample. I think they were pretty amazed.
Well, people don't realize that the ribs are so large. I mean, not as large as a spare rib or anything like that. But certainly, I mean, they got a lot of meat on them, and you can fry them whole crispy, or you can put them in some of those wonderful sauces. They're really good, nice hors d'oeuvre, you know.
It is a nice hors d'oeuvre.
So you like that?
I do. And, you know, drum is another great freshwater fish. They're in season right now, in fact. They say that it's often referred to as a gaspergoo or a grunner because, that grunting sound.
Well, they catch little clams and little barnacles, and they crack them with their teeth. And while they're rolling the clam shell in their mouth, you hear that.
So not a croaker.
Not a croaker.
Croaker actually does make a grunting sound.
Yeah, that's right.
But they're also called sheephead.
They call sheephead. Leah Chase in New Orleans loved to do the whole baked sheephead stuff. So she would stuff it with a nice crawfish stuffing and bake it whole with a tomato sauce. And there was always a confusion about the freshwater sheephead versus the saltwater sheephead that you get in the Gulf of Mexico. So, y'all, if you want to talk fish with teeth, I got one for you. It's one we're going to talk a little bit more about today, and that's the garfish. The alligator gar has those two big, they hideous-looking fish, prehistoric, been around millions of years. They've adopted so well to our area. One was caught in the Mississippi, 8 feet long, 300 pounds. But I've seen some pretty doggone big gar. But you're talking about gar. That one was about 7-8 years old, and even see it. It's on display in Jackson, Mississippi at the Museum of Natural Science there. And the Cachadas, used the garfish as a tribal symbol of strength and survival. They made stews, and the bones were used for ornaments, with the Cachadas.
Even the scales, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I have a garfish pin. Made out of the scales.
Well, I'd like
it's
to
beautiful.
See it.
I didn't make it.
Well, what I like about gar, Slama, we used to do tasso made out of gar, where you take the fillets and smoke them over pecan wood and use it as we would like pork tasso. But what I really loved about gar was the garfish boulettes, or the balls like meatballs that were flavored and then cooked in a rich brown gravy, sauce piquant thing, even used in gumbos and soups as well. Anyway, y'all, we're talking about freshwater fish. We're talking about garfish in particular because it's one of those unique fish to the waters of this country. There's a lot in South America as well. And when we come back, we have a great guest who's going to bring us up to date on all freshwater fish in Louisiana, but especially gar. We'll be back in a minute.
Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Wrap up your weekday mornings here on KRVS with the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle, guiding you through an hour-long showcase spotlighting both the latest releases from talent both near and far, and classics you may have forgotten about. Also, news about local performing arts, and much more. The Medicine Ball Caravan, Monday through Thursdays at 11 a.m. here on KRVS.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
We're live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice, Louisiana, every Saturday night from 6 to 7:30. Hi, this is Barry Ounsley inviting you to join us right here on KRVS for the Rendezvous des Cajuns every Saturday night from 6 to 7:30 with great Cajun music, Zydeco, lots of other regional music, stories, commentary, and who knows what else, because we are live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice, Louisiana.
Catfish, boogie, woogie, boogie, woogie, boogie, woogie, catfish, boogie, woogie, boogie, woogie, boogie.
Woke up this morning about 4:30. Who'd I see tiptoeing across my floor? My ever-loving baby with a rod in her hand, heading for the creek called Catfish Land. She yelled at me and said, "Get up, son, come along with me and let's have some fun." I grabbed my britches and a long cane pole, headed for the red-hot catfish hole.
Catfish, boogie, woogie, boogie, woogie.
Catfish boogie, do it, baby, with me.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And it's so nice to have all of you here with us. And today we're talking, as you know, about freshwater fish. And Michelle, we have a great, great, great guest and someone who's from my area over there at Nichols, you know, where my school's located.
That's
you
right.
You know what I'm talking about?
That's right.
So we're like family.
Elise Ferrara.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Huh? Elise is Associate Professor of Biological Studies at Nichols State, as you mentioned. She got her BA and her MS in biology, and she earned her PhD in fisheries management from Auburn University. She's done postdoctoral fellowships at Auburn and at Clemson. She's been a member of the Nichols Biological Science Department since 2002. She teaches courses in diverse living organisms, marine conservation and management, and ecological restoration. She also teaches a course in tropical biology, which I'm thinking of signing up for.
Oh, is that right? Huh?
Yeah.
You remind me of someone who'd be like on Amazon or somewhere looking at flesh-eating fish. Yeah, you fit right into that, huh?
Well, let me tell you, because the class is a 2 to 3 week trip to Costa Rica. I've been wanting to go to Costa Rica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just well, get a little credit. Yeah. Her special interests are in population dynamics and movements of fish in the Barataria estuary. And, of course, the use of native plants for coastal restoration. She's a big fan of the gar fish and is studying the culture techniques of the alligator gar, which we're going to talk to her extensively about today.
Yep.
Elise, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Welcome to Stirring It Up.
Thank you.
Today is the last day of the big tarpon rodeo out there. Have you had a chance to get out?
Oh, I couldn't miss the tarpon rodeo.
I ran into you at this wonderful event that Nichols State was putting on just recently for the Board of Regents, and you had this magnificent display there, which I want to talk about in a little bit, but I was so glad that we got to meet and got to say hello to each other. Now, of course, my culinary school is at Nichols, and you're teaching at Nichols and doing your research over there. What's happening in your department this upcoming semester? What's happening over at Nichols for you?
Well, this summer I actually had the opportunity to teach a course in marine invertebrate ecology at LUMCON, and then I'm going to finish up the last part of a marine fish ecology course at LUMCON. So I've been off campus a lot this summer, but I'm really enjoying it. It was the first opportunity for me to teach a course at LUMCON. But this fall we'll have, you know, our usual classes. We'll actually have our graduate student retreat that we do every year called Calypso. And with that, we do a mangrove planting out in the Ildeniers.
Oh, how cool is that? You know, we've heard of LUMCON before, but remind us what that is.
LUMCON is a marine lab in Cocodry, and it is used by all of the universities in Louisiana. They have a very strong university education program, as well as education program for K through 12. They do a lot of public events. There's a lot of very important research that is done at LUMCON. I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Nancy Rabelais.
Right, right.
She's done a lot of work on the dead zone, and she's the director of LUMCON. So it's a really unique place, and we're really, really lucky to have it here. And we really enjoy every opportunity that we have to go to LUMCON and to bring our students there.
Now, where did your love of marine life, are you from a fishing family or any other members in marine science in your family? How did you get involved?
Well, my dad's also a biologist, and I grew up near a small lake, but when I was growing up and I got to watch, you know, the Jacques Cousteau programs and, you know, David Attenborough programs, and, you know, heard about the work of Jane Goodall, so all of biology has always been just incredibly interesting to me.
Wow, that sounds great to have that kind of nurturing in a field that you're going to eventually be a part of.
Absolutely. You grew up in Louisiana, Elise?
No, I actually grew up in Ohio, just south of Lake Erie. So I've always been around water.
Yeah, right next door.
Yeah, our neighboring state, Ohio.
Our state of Ohio, absolutely.
Well, we're glad to have you as a native Louisianian now.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. The weather's a lot better.
You know, we did a fishing book a couple of years ago, Hooks, Lies, and Alibis, and one of the things that was so confusing is that there are so many names for every fish. You know, an example is kind of sheep's head, because there's freshwater, there's saltwater, but they're very different. How do we avoid the confusion?
Right. Common names are what people are going to use every day when they're talking about fish, and those are going to vary from one region. Heck, it can vary from one town to another in some cases. The best way to avoid any of those problems is to use the scientific names, but nobody remembers those. Only the people that are using them every day, because they're Latin, and they're going to be consistent across languages, across countries. So that's the way that scientists are able to determine which species is being talked about. But the common names oftentimes are much more colorful, and a lot of the local names, particularly in this area, are a better, I guess, depiction of what we think of those fish and how we possibly use them. So the common names can be very, very confusing.
Elise, I always thought, you know, that we owned the garfish. You know, I always thought that Louisiana, that was our fish, you know, it should have been our state fish.
I thought I discovered the alligator gar when I was 12.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I had discovered prehistoric fish.
Well, when I had my camp up at Lake Bruin, and the waters at Lake Bruin are full of alligator gar, yeah, I called my friend over at LSU and I said, look, we got a fish here you need to come and see. See, I thought we owned all of this. But of course, you know, we know the alligator gar from being born and reared in St. James Parish, all the bayous and swamplands of Louisiana are full. But after meeting you and seeing the work that you're doing, I had no clue. I knew it was a prehistoric fish. I knew it was one of our dinosaurs that still live today. But to know that they were all over the world, basically speaking, was a real shock to me. Tell us a little bit, before we get too deep into the alligator gar, what is it, where did it come from, what's the importance of it, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the group of fish, so the gars, have been around for about 180 million years. So they've actually outlasted the dinosaurs. They are fossils found from many different areas, but now the only living or extant species are found in the Americas, in North America, and then down into Central America and over into Cuba. They're a really unique group of fishes. They're able to air breathe, so that's one reason why people tend to see them more often in the summertime, because the fish have to air breathe more frequently when the water temperatures increase. So during the winter, you probably don't see garfish surfacing to breathe, but during the summertime when the waters are warmer and their metabolism is higher, they have to breathe air more frequently. So that's where you're going to see them breaking the surface of the water to gulp air. They also are armored, and their scales are very similar to the enamel of our teeth. So you can think of wearing a coat of teeth and think of how that would act almost like a coat of armor.
Right.
We've actually had garfish in gill nets, and alligators have grabbed the garfish and have not been able to puncture the scales. Now, they could crush the fish's head, crush the skull, but they were not actually able to puncture the scales. So those are a couple of the very unique aspects of garfish, but they have been around for a very long time. We like to call them a very persistent and ancient fish.
Well, you know, it's interesting to also see renderings by early explorers drawing those fish for the first time, and actually in the French language calling them the armored fish.
We know that they're in Louisiana, but are they prevalent throughout the United States, or are we unique?
Mostly in the eastern portion of the U.S. Mississippi River drainage is going to have some of the smaller species, so you will find gars in places that you wouldn't normally think of as part of the Mississippi River drainage, places like Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma. But we have the largest population of alligator gar in Louisiana, and then Texas also has a very strong population, but they're managing that population as a trophy fishery.
Now, we always ask the question, why did they survive? You know, when you talk about the dinosaurs and the age of the dinosaurs and all the different species in that dinosaur world millions of years ago, here's a fish that made it. They had to adapt, obviously, to a lot of different things. Why did they survive? Do we know?
Well, and actually, that's why we one of the reasons that makes them so important and so unique. I would like to say that they got it right a long time ago, and they stuck with it. But their air-breathing ability, they can tolerate water quality that would probably kill other fishes. So when we had the display up in Baton Rouge, you noticed that we had no air stones. We weren't pumping air into the tank because the fish didn't need it, because they can actually come to the surface and gulp air. So they're able to tolerate conditions that would kill most fishes, plus being armored, plus being large, makes them more difficult for other things to eat. So they, like we like to say, they got it right early on and stuck with it.
Now, any other animal or fish able to breathe in and out of water, that in itself is interesting. Is it a lung gill system that they have that makes that happen, or what is the physiology behind that?
Their swim bladder or their air bladder is actually very interesting. If you've ever cleaned a gar and have seen their swim bladder, it's very vascularized. It's not, you know, shiny and kind of greasy looking like what you see in things like speckled trout. There's a lot of connections that go from the top of the swim bladder down to the bottom, and it's almost spongy. So it's not quite like, you know, what we think of our lung material, but it has a lot of surface area in it, a lot of vascularization, a lot of blood supply, and it's very efficient at extracting oxygen from the air.
Wow, that's
so. Do you think that the alligator gar adapted to its environment, or did it have a lot of these qualities before the extinction of so many prehistoric animals, or did it just adapt?
They've been pretty much the way that we see them now for most of their evolutionary history. So they, like I said before, they got it right early on and stuck with it. It's worked for them all the way through, you know, 180 million years of history. So they
just to hear that term. Now, they're also carnivores, and they're known to, in some cases, ambush their prey. Have they ever attacked humans? Or because, I mean, they're such a ferocious fish, you would think that they would have no trouble just coming in and grabbing you and walking away. But is that myth or fact?
It's definitely a myth. They have teeth that are like little needles. They don't have the ability to grab something and cut off or bite off a chunk like, say, something like a shark would be able to do. What they use their teeth for is to grab their prey, and then they'll twist the prey around or turn the prey around so that they can swallow it whole. They don't have the ability to take bites. So there's no reason for a gar to grab a human because they can't swallow it. So people that believe that they have been grabbed or bitten by a gar, it was probably something else. And if they have been bitten by a gar, they're probably doing something to that fish that they should have been doing.
Now, somebody was telling me that the eggs of the gar are poisonous, but yet we clean the gar, we eat the meat, which we'll talk about in a minute. And I never thought of the eggs as being poisonous. We just don't, because we do eat a lot of fish eggs. I'm surprised we didn't try to eat the eggs of the gar.
I'm surprised you didn't.
Yeah, no,
up.
Because we do. I mean, we fry the fish eggs.
Turtle eggs, catfish, everything else.
Are they poisonous?
Yes, they are. And out of the gar species that have been looked at, alligator gar eggs appear to be the most poisonous.
Wow.
They're not going to kill you, but it will be similar to a really bad case of food poisoning. And then with that, you have to worry about things like dehydration and loss of electrolytes. But definitely not something you want to eat.
Oh, now, why is that? Why is those eggs poisonous as opposed to, is there any other fish roe that's poisonous?
And that's actually a really interesting question, because other ancient fishes, things like shoepick, bowfin, or sturgeon, paddlefish, they all have eggs that we can eat, and they're relatives of the gar, but the gar eggs themselves are toxic.
Now let's talk about the fish as food. Are they getting to a point where, because of habitat or anything else, they're getting close enough that they're going to need to be protected at some point, because they are a good eating fish. I mean, one of the dishes I love tremendously is the meat ground with seasonings like a meatball and cooked into a wonderful tomato gravy or something, and have this fish balls, not like a croquette, but, and the meat is wonderful. The white, beautiful meat is, you have to grind it a couple of times because it is a stringy meat. But are we finding it protected in any way, or is, are we still have enough of them that eating isn't an issue?
Well, in Louisiana, we still have strong populations, but we are the only state in the U.S. that does not have regulations on alligator gar, at least within their historical distribution. We still have a lot of fishes in our coastal areas, a lot of alligator gar in our coastal areas, but in some of the more inland areas, we've seen populations decline. In areas where waterways have been channelized or wetlands or swamps have been drained, we've lost a lot of the habitat that they need for spawning and for the growth of the juveniles. In our coastal areas, we still have a lot of that flooded vegetation and a lot of the habitat that they need. So we still support both recreational and commercial fisheries in the coastal areas. But we could be facing problems in the future as we continue to lose land and we have saltwater encroach into those areas, where the gar would be spawning or the small fish would be living. The adults can tolerate full-strength seawater, no problem. But the young fishes have to basically grow into that saltwater tolerance, and the eggs don't survive at higher salinity. But if we continue to have saltwater encroaching into our freshwater areas, we could see a decline in our coastal populations.
And is that part of your interest in coastal restoration?
Yeah, actually, it was after the oil spill is when we really started to think about that, looking at areas where there could be possibly impacts due to oil moving into some of our coastal habitats. But we have, for several years, been looking at that salt tolerance. At what age can they start to tolerate higher and higher salinities? So, yeah, that is one of the things that we're looking at. And we also are in the process of comparing some of the inland populations to our coastal populations to see if there is a difference in their salt tolerance.
Well, Professor, I want to say thanks so much. We thought it's so interesting that our listeners would love to know more about it. If they wanted to get in touch with you, we'll certainly be able to put your information on our website if anybody's interested in learning more. Or maybe, I don't know if you do speaking on the subject, but if you do, I know it's extremely interesting just to see the display that you had the other day. So maybe some of the schools or whatever. I know your time is precious, but do you do any of this community outreach with your project?
Yeah, we're starting to do more of that. And actually, we also have colleagues up at LSU that we work with in the Ag Center, particularly at the Aquaculture Research Station. That's where the broodstock alligator gar are held that we use to produce the larvae each year. So we can take the fish around for groups to see or give presentations. We also have on our website our past student research. So all of the theses are posted on our website.
Great.
And they're accessible to anyone if they're interested in reading that material. But, you know, I'm never going to pass up a chance to talk gar.
Well, you do a great job of it. I mean, you're wonderful in your excitement about it, but also the research is so important. And a fish that we've known and respected so much for so long is finally now in the limelight in research, which is wonderful. And I'm glad to know that we can still have enough population to turn into great garfish balls or tasso, because it is one of the wonderful meats. So congratulations, and I look forward to running into you on campus this fall, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maybe you can come talk to our students about a good garfish ball recipe.
Okay, great. We can clean some.
There you go. Good. All right, y'all. We'll be back in just a minute. Thank you so much, Professor.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign, gone fishing, instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog. You're just plain old gone.
What's happening musically in Dakar? Joburg, Kinshasa, Port Spain, Havana, Accra, Dar es Salaam, Cairo, Paris, New York. Well, tune in this week and every week to find out on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRBS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Greetings. Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Fix me some coffee and a honey bun. Jumped in the pickup and gave it the gas. I'm going out to catch a 5-pound bass. Down by the lakeside, just off the ramp, all them people sleeping in fishing camps. Some out in pup pens, some on the grass. They're all dreaming about that 5-pound bass. Early birdie always gets.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best-tasting food and culture show on radio. And today we're talking freshwater fish, and I want to thank Dr. Elise Ferrer for that great, great, great commentary on the alligator gar. That was very interesting. And anyway, we will have all of her information on our website, jfalls.com. Just go up to the radio show and click into Starting It Up. And also, remember our Facebook page, facebook.com/stirring, S-T-I-R-R-I-N, Starting It Up Radio. Slama, what's going on our webpage? Anything happening?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we make posts to our Facebook page that some of that information from Jay Falls just spills on over because we got so much of it.
Well, good.
But yeah, that's where our public forum to discuss this show happens on the internet. That's the Facebook page, Stirring It Up. Sometimes we post photos on there. But we had a photo of you guys over at Pimignoli's.
Well, that must have been when we went to get our tamales.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we must have got some good comments from Pimignola's because that's one of our favorite places, and they wanted to show. I bet we got a lot of reactions to those guys.
Yeah. It really stirred it up, I tell you. People were raving about Pimignola's. It's a popular place. And one of our friends, Keith John Paul, says he'd never been to Pimignola's, but he's going to have to check it out.
Oh,
but
good.
He won't be disappointed, that's for sure.
He was asking you, Chef, if you've ever been to La Reina on Perkins.
La Reina, that Honduran restaurant, huh?
Yeah, over there on Perkins here in Baton Rouge.
You know what I said, Michelle. That's Segan and Segan and Perkins right there. You know where
Calandro's
has that big shopping center there. That's where it's at.
I haven't been there. What's
the best kept secret in town? I hadn't even had a chance to eat with Michelle there yet.
A big old place?
No, a little bitty old
What's
thing.
What's the name of it?
La Reina, R-E-Y-N-A-L-A. Capital R-E-Y-N-A, Honduran restaurant. It's owned by the Espinoza family. The Espinoza family. In fact, the daughter, Isabel Jacobs, she's the one who greets you at the door. It's a little bitty old place. Like I said, the best kept secret in town. Very small. I think only about 8 or 9 tables.
Oh, goodness.
I'm not sure. But they have some really, really great food over there. And that pollo, the mole that they do with the chicken. They have some really great dishes over there, too. The chicken mole is good. The stewed pork and a kind of a tomato sauce, which all of us in Louisiana like. They have some good grilled fish, too, with the fried plantains. So yeah, they got a lot of great dishes there. I'm glad he asked about it because it's another one that we got to go do a picture in, you know, get a little shot over there. Somebody was telling me about another great taco restaurant, too, that just opened up. I want to go visit. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Mexican food. You know that. But I do like good Mexican food.
That's right.
And you know your good buddy Andrew Capone?
Oh, he
Andrew's,
made a recommendation.
Oh, Andrew's an expert. Andrew Capone, he's president of Stovehound Club right behind David, right? Huh?
Of course.
And David,
right?
Well, he handles Louisiana. David handles Alabama.
Get to Alabama.
So Andrew was telling me that he was lucky enough to eat there free when he went to hook up a dishwasher, because he hooks up dishwashers, you see. So he knows where all the restaurants are. That's how I know about this little restaurant. Andrew.
Andrew Capone.
But anyway, yeah, mole. That's what I wanted to. Maybe I'll give you a recipe for good mole.
You got a good recipe for mole?
Do I have a recipe, huh? Of course I do. Anyway, so what else going on the website?
People well, need to over know. At jfulls.com, we are beginning to archive all of our old shows. We have a podcast format, which means basically you could listen to it on the go. You can just download an MP3 if you choose, or you can just stream it. But we have shows all the way through 2013, and we're getting some 2012s up there soon. So
okay, good. Michelle, what about good books for building our culinary libraries out there amongst our friends?
Well, I found the best book. If you're going to be in one of these fishing rodeos, you need to have this book in the tackle box. Called Sport Fish of the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, that's a great book.
It's
right
a
there.
Picture dictionary of the fish. Look at this one, sailfish. Isn't that gorgeous?
That's cool. A beautiful fish.
That is a beautiful fish.
And you're probably thinking you could actually, in your dreams, hook on to one of those.
I don't know. These are big. It said 30 to 60 pounds. I've had a 50-pound tuna, as you well know, on my line.
Okay.
And I thought I was going overboard. So I don't know that I could catch a sailfish. But it's good eating. Good broiled or smoked. This is a very good book. All color, beautiful renderings of the fish, describes the fish, tells you the size of the fish generally, the food value, how to catch it. Really good.
Oh, Vic Dunaway did that book.
Yes, he did.
It's a small book. It's only one of those little 5x7.
Yeah.
So it's only about a half inch thick. But everything in the Gulf of Mexico worth catching is in that book. So absolutely, you should have sport.
They got Alligator Gar in here.
Sports Fish of the Gulf of Mexico, y'all. You want to pick up a copy of it?
The second book that I like is Gulf Coast Fish. It's a cookbook by Roy Gus Jr.
Oh, yeah. You talk about a big restaurant family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. And, of course, he's a man after our own hearts here. He talks about cooking with fish substitutions, how much to purchase, the cleaning, the freezing, the dressing of fish. I mean, all that is invaluable information, plus great recipes, too. A lot of the lesser-known fish are even included in here. So, great book, both of them. Sport Fish of the Gulf of Mexico by Vic Dunaway, and also Gulf Coast Fish, a cookbook, Roy Gust Jr.
And Roy is a cook. I mean, you know, his family, one of the great restaurant families in New Orleans, and he's a big fisherman, and I guarantee you his book has really been sought after. Mm-hmm. Anyway, y'all, two great fish books. And again, I always say go to the big bookstores first, you know, but of course you can go online to look for them as well. And a lot of these books that are either out of publication or whatever, a lot of times you can find great buys on them and build a library, because the facts are the fish in the Gulf of Mexico aren't changing. And the great recipe is, you know, they're always good to have on your shelf. So always look for these great books. Wonderful. I know I do. We always try to.
I love this. Moulin Rouge sauce. I just like the name.
Moulin Rouge. I might put that.
Moulin Rouge sauce.
So, Michelle, we have a couple of recipes here that you might want to. We have a garfish. We're talking about garfish. I mean, I have a good garfish tasso, which is.
Now, let me ask you something.
What?
All right. So, if I don't want to go out and catch my own alligator gar, at least it's something about commercial fishery. Are they commercially sold alligator gar?
Yeah, you can go.
So if I went to Tony's, I could get an alligator gar?
Absolutely. Tony's will have alligator gar. I was going to say, you're not going to find alligator gar at your big box stores, you know, or your gourmet stores.
Yeah.
You're not going to find it. But if you go to the old fish markets all throughout the Bayou Country, you will find fresh or frozen alligator gar or garfish. And you may even find it ground already, which is the way most people will take the fillets of the garfish, which is a very white, and it is a stringy meat. It's kind of like eating, like a grass-fed piece of meat. Anyway, you can get it, and I always ground it twice. I put it in my grinder, and I run it through a meat grinder with a fine blade twice, and then it's just got a really nice, soft texture to it. You cut that sinew, because it's an armored fish, and once the scales come off, this fish has lived, like she said, 2-3 million years in the in the water. This fish ain't playing around, but it's got great flavor. And then you mix that with onion, celery, bell pepper, and all that, and we make good garfish balls out of it. Or you can smoke it. That's what the Indians did, and that's where the tasso comes from. So anyway, y'all, I have baked sheep head. I got a great sheep head recipe that I absolutely love. And by the way, all of these are going to be on the website. I'm not just going to might choose one doesn't mean you can't get them all.
The Guests and Goodies section on jfoles.com.
Yeah, absolutely. You go there. What's the name of that section?
Is that Guests and Goodies?
Guests and Goodies. So, Slama, garfish, tasso, or I'm going to give you a choice of two here. Garfish or baked sheep. Head. Which one do you want, baked sheep's head or garfish tasso, Michelle?
Well, I think we ought to do the tasso.
You want to do the tasso?
I think so. You've got a smokehouse.
Good
get
point.
A little alligator gar. Get a little smoke.
All your big green eggs you picked up at Walmart. I mean, yeah, it's all that. Just any pit'll work. Anyway, y'all, tasso is a dried product that's been seasoned with cayenne pepper, garlic, salt, then heavily smoked, normally with pecan wood or oak wood. The word tasso is believed to have come from the Spanish word tasajo, meaning dried or cured meat. And of course, it's like a jerky, but not quite that cooked jerky. Is like almost like eating plastic, right?
Yeah.
But tasso has a softened center, but cured in the smoke, so to speak. However, you know, pork or fish was also curried and dried in this same method. And although the delicacy is often thinly sliced and eaten alone, almost like an hors d'oeuvre, you can take the tasso and just slice it very, very thin. It's primarily used as a seasoning ingredient for vegetables like butter beans or peas or things like that.
You mean like the pork tasso
pork and fish, absolutely. Fish tasso, because the texture of the meat is really meat-like, you know, so it's going to be similar to pork. Yeah, we also put it in gumbos and soup. It also has gained acclaim as an hors d'oeuvre served with a dipping or fruit glaze because the smoke and fruit goes so well together. Some of Louisiana's native people, we mentioned Janie Lusser a minute ago, from Terrio, Louisiana, who's a member of the United Houma Indian Nation, continues the family tradition of making garfish tasso that she uses as a seasoning in her shrimp and okra gumbo. She'll put that nice
that she makes without a roux. That's a whole. Yeah, that's a very unique.
Yeah, because she makes
gumbo.
It with she makes it with the ground leaves of the sassafras tree, which we call filets. That's where the word filet gumbo comes from. When you think filet gumbo,
and hers truly is filet gumbo.
Yeah, there's no roux in it.
No roux.
No roux. The shrimp 100%. Goes into the pot. So anyway, y'all, to make garfish tasso, we're going to use 4 pounds of 6 to 8 ounce. Garfish fillets. So again, you have to go to one of these regional shops like Tony's in Baton Rouge, and a lot of other small fish markets will all carry, especially if you're in the country. And that's another good reason to go on these Voyager Discovery
that's right.
I love so much, to just get in the car and take off and go discover a little meat market here. Remember, we used to do that before you got rich and famous.
No, do you remember, though, one time we were on our way to Poverty Point to do a little cooking demonstration, and I think we were in, like, what is that little town right across from Natchez when you get to the Louisiana side?
Vidalia.
Like Vidalia. Remember there was that little seafood market on the side?
That's right.
And they had that sign. What was it? Buffalo fish?
Yeah, that's right. Buffalo fish. That's right.
And see, we stopped.
That's what I'm talking about. See, if you see a sign that says buffalo or calves are good, you're going to stop. Let's get back to talking.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, anyway, y'all, 4 pounds of 6 to 8 ounce garfish fillets. They come in kind of long strips. And then in a bowl, y'all, I would mix 1/2 cup of Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon or 2 of Louisiana hot sauce. You want to put 1/4 cup of cayenne pepper. Seems like a lot. But
that
well,
is,
remember, you got
yeah.
4 pounds of meat, too.
That's not a lot.
I mean, that's not a lot. 1/4 cup of cracked black pepper. That's for your aromatics, okay? Because the black pepper smells really good.
I bet
good.
It's going to be aromatic.
Very aromatic.
I'm sneezing already.
1/4 cup of salt, because tasso is a seasoning meat, remember. When you put it in the pot, you're going to let it cook in before you just start throwing salt and pepper into the pot. because the fish becomes the seasoning. That's what people need to remember. When you buy a seasoning meat, allow it to season the pot before you put your normal seasonings in if you wouldn't have that piece of meat in. You with me? And then, of course, a half a cup of granulated garlic. So you see where I am? All of these things are mixed.
That sounds good.
And you see, so now you have a paste because you only have in your liquid, you only have a half a cup. And all of the rest of this stuff makes about another cup or so, cup and a half. So you can see it's going to be more of a paste, right? So then you're going to take the 4 pounds of fillets and put them down in a big bowl. And then you're going to pour this mixture on top of it. And you're going to, using your hands, you're going to blend all of that seasoning into the meat. So the Worcestershire and the hot sauce and now, the cayenne and black pepper and salt and granulated garlic is just wrap all through this meat just wonderfully. So anyway, you're going to coat those that fish really well with these seasonings. You're going to mix it. And, of course, the fish will exude some water, right? Some of that juices will extrude out of that fish into this paste, and it's going to kind of make sure that it's I'll wrap it in plastic overnight. The next day I take it out and I put it on a pan, and I let it drip. Normally, I put it like on a rack, you know, that one of those cooling racks.
Okay.
And I let it drip just like you do jerky, and let the excess moisture drop off. And then I put it in my smokehouse, my smoker, at 200 degrees. I bring the smoker up to 200. A lot of great pecan wood, or a lot of great sassafras wood, or even oak, hickory. And then I go ahead and lay it down on there, and I smoke it until about two and a half hours until it's cooked.
Oh, that's it?
Oh, yeah. You're just pounding that smoke to that meat. Remember, the fish is only very thin.
And this
thin.
Is a hot smoke.
Yeah, it's 200 degrees. You're boiling water at 212. So you're at a boiling
right
temperature
there,
almost.
Top, yeah.
So 2 hours, 2.5 hours. I mean, remember, you can do an 8-pound shoulder, pork shoulder, in 6 to 8 hours. So 2.5 hours for this little fish is plenty.
That's
right?
That's a lot. Yeah.
And it's pop, but the point is, you want to pound the smoke to it. And you can then, if you want, I even take it in, and after that, you can heat it up on a grill and use it, slice it as an hors d'oeuvre if you want to. Or you can freeze
That's
it.
That's interesting, though.
Yeah, or you can freeze it and cube it. And when you're cooking beans or you're cooking anything else, you can throw it in that cabbage and all that. And you can use a tasso, a garfish tasso. And then also, I'm going to tell Mariette to make sure she puts our garfish ball recipe on there, our boulettes of garfish, which is a great sauce that you make the balls, you ground it, you season it with all that, and you go into it. So anyway, y'all, that's garfish today, and it's another one of our great exotic foods of the bayou. You don't want to miss it. So y'all go ahead to one of those country meat fish markets. They'll look at you and say, this person knows what they're talking about. We're going to see you later.